Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
Peter, you look refreshed.
Very refreshed.
Yeah, didn't do anything crazy on the weekend.
No, too busy studying for the U of G.
Nerd. Anyway, we're glad you had time to at least watch the movie and review it with us today.
Yeah.
So
that's always nice time for a movie.
Oh, there you go. Hope your professors didn't hear that. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here in our new time slot every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk about the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new video game-based action movie, Tomb Raider. That is in the back half of the show, and for the first half this week, we're not going to do movie news, but we're going to talk about video game movies. Now, for 25 years, Hollywood has tried to crack that egg with very limited success, trying to turn popular video games into popular, well-made movies, but apparently that's easier said than done. And so, we were talking about the show this week, and, we couldn't do a top five list of the best video game movies because...
No, it's impossible.
That's impossible. there are no top five. There may be, ones you like, ones that don't entirely suck. That doesn't make for a very exciting list, though. So what we agreed on was doing a top five movies about, based on, or inspired by video games. So that seems like a good place to sort of put together because, it's hard to ignore that video games aren't very influential on pop culture now. It's actually a bigger business than the movie business. It's like makes twice as much money as the movie business.
Yeah, I think Sony makes a lot more money through its PlayStation than it does its TVs and other systems like that.
I think it makes more money on PlayStation than all other facets of its business combined.
Oh, yeah.
But are you a big gamer, Peter?
I wouldn't say I'm a huge gamer, but yeah, no, I love video games. If it's like a open world RPG, then I do get obsessed. So like Oblivion, Fallout, Skyrim, Fallout New Vegas, the most underrated of all of the Bethesda games. But not like a huge gamer. I'm not like in front of a computer like 24/7.
I like Simpsons Crazy Taxi.
Oh, I remember playing that when I was young. Yeah, Simpsons Crazy Taxi is amazing.
I have it on Xbox, the original Xbox. I do enjoy playing that to unwind, and I like some of the first person shooters. I like the classic games because obviously that's what I grew up with, is original NES and Super Nintendo.
See, I grew up with PlayStation 1. Yeah. So I play like a ton of Crash Bandicoot. Like when Crash Bandicoot came out, a reboot on PS4, I immediately got that.
Yeah. No, yeah. I have a PS1 that I do have a Crash Bandicoot game for that I enjoy. It's funny that it's been 25 years since they first tried the video game movie. That was what we were talking about before, Air, Super Mario Brothers with...
Yeah, I think that was the first one.
Non-Italian Bob Hoskins and Hispanic John Leguizamo as two Italian plumbers. And,
I love John Leguizamo.
Well, who doesn't? But I think we can all agree Dennis Hopper as Bowser, Misstep.
Well, when I first watched it, I was too young to know like who Dennis Hopper was, right? When I recently rewatched, I was like, "Oh my God, he's in this! Like, what were his thoughts? What was he thinking?"
There are a lot of people when you're watching that, like, he's in this anyway.
Yeah, he did not need to be.
We do want to talk about video games and video game movies in positive ways, so we're gonna do this top five movies about, based on, or inspired by video games. So, your first pick.
My first pick was Silent Hill. Silent Hill.
I forgot about Silent Hill.
Yeah. Well, because it's such a scary video game that I always forget it's not just like a horror movie. Whenever I think of it, I think it's scary, so I think of horror movie. And I picked Silent Hill because I actually think it's genuinely an okay film. At least the first one. The second one with Kit Harington and Jon Snow is is not good at all. But this one with Sean Bean, I remember watching it. It was probably like preteen. And it scared me a ton. Like, to the equal par of the video game. It was as scary as the video game, I found.
I'm not sure I found it scary. I mean, I was probably considerably older than you when
I was just super young.
But I do think it's creepy, and there are scenes where the air raid siren goes off and everything goes dark and, a monster's coming. And I think those scenes are very, very effective. And Rhoda Mitchell was the... the lead in that. And she was and that was when they were trying to make Rhoda Mitchell happen. I thought she was very good in that. And yeah, I forget about it because, you know, the overwhelming weight of video game movies. It's not a great movie, but it's a well-made movie. It's well done.
It's as good as like a video game movie can be, I found.
Yes.
Movie based solely around a video game. Obviously, right. There's better documentaries about video games and things like that.
Well, that's a good segue for my first pick, is Indie Game the Movie, which was a kickstarted project. Mm-hmm. And it's two Canadian filmmakers, James Swirsky and Lisson Pryatt. And they followed three. I think they followed more than that, but the movie became about these three. Well, they're four because one's a team, but these four video game designers who are working in the indie game scene, and are the one team who are working on Super Meat Boy, Jonathan Blow, no, that's not right, Ed McMillan and Tommy Refrain, who are working on Super Meat Boy and how it's like affecting their lives and their mental health, mm-hmm. trying to crank out this video game because they're picked up by Microsoft for the Xbox network, but Microsoft's like, can you do it in a month? And they're like, yeah, sure, because we're poor and starving and we want to be a success in the video game business. And then you have Phil Fish, who created this video game called Fez, which is became a legend in indie gaming. Oh, yeah. And it just was in development hell for years.
I was playing that last night.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was. And I didn't know you picked that film.
Okay. Yeah, no, you did not.
I found out about Fez through this film when I first watched it.
I think a lot of people.
Yeah, well, same with Super Meat Boy.
Super Meat Boy, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other one what's his name? Jonathan Blow, who did Braid, and he talked. But I find it interesting because, there's an underlying conversation that's perhaps like classist and like, is video games art? And I think this the documentary makes a very compelling case that video games are art because these people are treating their video games as art, mm-hmm. and are putting so much heart and soul into them. And
Fez is 100% art. It's one absolutely. Of the most beautiful games I've ever played, absolutely. Visually speaking.
Yeah, so in terms of giving the people who do believe that video games are art, giving them like a really good like talking point, like shoving it in the face of the people who are like, it's not art, it makes a really good case.
Oh yeah.
Number two.
My second one is Max Payne, directed
really?
By John Moore. Well, I didn't pick it because I liked it. I actually picked it because I was right next to the abandoned building as they were filming it. One friend lived in Hamilton right by the Semen Factory,
right.
which was right by an abandoned building. They filmed most of it.
Okay.
So I thought that was cool. I got to see them filming it, even though it turned out to see a good
film.
Did
you see Mark Wahlberg, bro?
No, I didn't see Mark Wahlberg.
You probably walked in a tent and...
Yeah.
Because so nobody would see him.
Seen Wahlberg and Ludacris and the Nelly Furtado. Canadian legend would have been really cool.
I forget that Nelly Furtado was doing acting for a while, that she was trying to be.
What, before the music? Was she?
No, this was like after she did the music. But she was trying to like do the, I don't know, the Beyonce thing and being like a queen of all media.
Yeah, it didn't really work out.
No, it
didn't. For either, it didn't really work out for Beyonce either.
No, or Britney, that's
tough. Ludacris did it well.
Ludacris is doing all right.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing I remember about Max Payne is it's like set in New York, mm-hmm. but there's a scene where Mark Wahlberg is clearly walking across Queen Street West.
yeah, they filmed the majority of it in Canada.
Yeah, so it makes me laugh. That's the only thing I remember about it, because you see streetcar tracks on the ground. It's like, oh, that's not New York.
Yeah, I just remember seeing them film it and then being disappointed in theaters. Did you see it in theaters?
I did see it in theaters because I was doing I was a movie reviewer for a site that at the time, so I was watching all the movies, including John Payne, which was aptly named, or Max Payne, I should say. My second film is Hardcore Henry. Even though it's not based on a video game, it is very much stylized like one. It's a first-person shooter, but a movie. It's it's all point of view shots. It's kind of got like a ticking clock component to it. Charlotte Copley keeps popping up as different characters who are also the same character who's like constantly killed.
Okay.
So it seems like that's very video gamey.
So you said it's point of view. So do you actually see the central character, the main character?
You see the point of view of the central character from beginning to end.
Oh, okay. That's
so you really don't, cool. yeah, you do not see the face. It's not like an actor. I think they used a couple of stuntmen, because the apparatus they were using for the camera was, you know, affected their necks. Even though they were using GoPros, which, if you know what a GoPro looks like, it's a fairly small camera kind of meant for these things, but the apparatus they were using to get the point of view shots was not great for neck and shoulder tension.
Still, that's impressive. That
it's an impressive
point of view film. I've never seen one.
It's impressive.
Like,
it's completely ludicrous. It's over the top. If you liked, you know, the Jason Statham crank movies, this will appeal to you. It's, you know, it's got all the kind of like adolescent male traps of, you know, just like terrible bad guys, gunplay, and Haley Bennett plays the main character's scientist girlfriend, and she's always got one button too few on her blouse done up, and her skirt is north of the knee. So it's very tuned into that. But
yeah, it's got a lot of elements of like basic video games or first person shooter video games.
Exactly. So that translates very well, even though it's not actually based on a video game.
Video game might be based on it now.
That would be interesting.
That'd be very interesting.
But yeah, it was an interesting film experiment. It's not great film, but it's interesting filmmaking, and it's worth, I think, seeing. It might end up being one of those film class tutorials one of these days about, you know, the
what it leads to.
Yeah, exactly.
An indie film that, you know, led to future films to be more popular.
Yeah.
And made in a point of view way. I'd be okay with that. That'd be cool.
I think you can watch it on Netflix now if you want to check it out. It's still on Netflix. Sadly, Indie Game the movie is not.
No, it used to be, though.
It was
for
a long
time. Or on the American
time.
One, yeah.
Yeah. But it was... you can probably find it on iTunes anyway. Or anywhere you rent movies online. Anyway, number three.
I picked Super Mario Bros., the original one. I think it came out, 1989?
I think it was a little bit after that. I think it was 93.
93? Yeah. I saw it as a kid, and I really... I was about to say I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I really enjoyed it. As a kid, I found it funny, and I remember it, so it must have had some elements that I enjoyed as a kid. But no, it's a very bad film. It is a very bad representation of the Mario games.
It was like there was no way they could replicate the Mario games.
What it is, it's actually the most similar to the most recent space Mario game, the most recent one for the Wii.
Really?
Yeah, where it's a lot of it is set in an actual like human world.
Interesting.
Yeah. Still not like it at all, but if you're going to compare it to any of the Mario games, the most recent one, I think Mario Odyssey.
Right.
Yeah, Mario Odyssey is the most like that.
Right, because it's like a back lot. They took a back lot of like some kind of like random cityscape and like, okay, we're going to turn this into the Mushroom Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess somebody was like, okay, because some studio person, because they, you know, never played video games and maybe their kid plays with video games. And so they've heard the word Super Mario Brothers in a sentence. Yeah, I mean, it's very 90s.
Oh, very.
Going back
very
and watching 90s. It now, it's so 90s. With, you know, like the Danny Elfman-esque soundtrack and the dark kind of template, and you know, it kind of carries on from that Batman, because Batman was such a huge success, so everyone thought everything had to be kind of dark and grimy. And
it's back when John Leguizamo was just in, you know, amazing comedies like The Pest.
Yeah, yeah,
which came out around the same time.
That was supposed to be his big sort of transfer to mainstream too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Bob Hoskins, who I guess has the dimensions of Super Mario, but it was
I guess he sort of looks like Super Mario. Weirdly, Danny DeVito would have been good at being Mario, because Mario, they're supposed to be like, I don't mean to offend him this way, but they're supposed to be a lot shorter too, right?
That's right.
Like Mario's supposed to be like 4'11" or like 5 feet.
I would like to visit the alternative world where Danny DeVito played Super Mario in the Super Mario Brothers live action movie.
Yeah,
I think that would have been interesting.
Mm-hmm. Also, if he is listening, I did mean some offense, because I think he recently cheated on Rio Perlman, and I'm watching Cheers right now, so that's a no-no, Danny DeVito. But no, overall, okay. I enjoyed it as a young kid, the Mario Bros.
Okay. I think they're doing an animated Super Mario Brothers.
Okay.
So we'll see how that turns out. I doubt it'll be with Dennis Hopper's gone, isn't it? So he can't even do the voice of Browser.
Yeah, he is.
That'd be interesting. Yeah,
I still don't get why he had to do it, because he was in the same decade. He was in, you know, Blue Velvet and actually like popular films and like really artsy film. I don't know why he needed.
I don't know. I've never. I've seen like people like Michael Caine in interviews, and I've seen Malcolm McDowell at like Fan Expo, and they'll just talk about like the British working class idea of like when you're offered a job, you
take it.
Okay. It doesn't, you know, because who knows when you might get another job. And that's why like Michael Caine isn't like in Jaws the Revenge, and Malcolm McDowell's in, you know,
Entourage.
Halloween and Entourage. Yeah. That's exactly right. My number three is Edge of Tomorrow, which I think is probably the most video gamey of any movie, because the plot is about a guy who is dropped into a situation, instantly killed, but he comes back to life the day before, and he keeps having to learn how to take his skills in this mecha suit and get better and better so he can advance further and further along the mission.
Was this Tom Cruise?
A big boss, yes. Tom Cruise, the Doug Liman movie.
Yeah.
That's such a video game thing, because of course when you first spawn on a video game, you're trying to get all the moves and how all the buttons work, and so you don't get further into game. But the more you master the game, the further along you get. And there's cheats, you know. In the movie, Tom Cruise meets Emily Blunt, who's already been through all this, so that's kind of a cheat. And
okay,
and
is it based on a video game or
no?
Just...
It was based on a manga, Japanese manga.
Okay.
So it's not really, I mean, it's a great sci-fi movie and a great premise, but there's something about it that captures the idea of playing a video game.
Yeah. It's a good representation of the video game world.
Yeah. So, you know, the more you play, the more you get better. And, mm-hmm. and you know, when you get killed, you go back to the start of the level and have to do it all over again. And, it's weird that in you sort of pick up on the themes and the ideas and the tropes in these movies, and it seems like the grander culture understands video games better than people who make video games movies mm-hmm. do, which is bizarre. But I don't know what you would, I don't know if you would, if you plunked, you know, Doug Liman and have him make like a movie based on Call of Duty or Fallout or Biosphere, like how would that would look, or Halo or something like that. I mean, would he, you know, would he screw that pooch like everyone else? Or would, you know, he, having made something like Edge of Tomorrow and understand kind of the basic tools,
would he be able to do a good job of it?
Yeah. Now? Anyway.
Hey, maybe one day we'll find out.
You never know. Stranger things.
Yeah.
Your number four.
My number four was Pixels. Directed by the Chris Columbus. Home Alone and other amazing films. Or Harry Potter.
Yep.
Yeah, and I picked it because I am a huge Chris Columbus fan. I am a huge Adam Sandler fan. I am a huge Kevin James fan. And
you don't hear that too often.
No, you do not. Although his TV shows, like Kevin Can Wait, they make makes a good amount of money. Millions of people
watch
it.
He makes a good living.
Yeah. But no, Pixels, I think it's not a good film, but if you're 10 and under, you'll probably enjoy it, I think. I think if I was a kid, this would have been one of the Adam Sandler films I loved. And it is, it references, like, you know, hundreds of different video games, mostly like 80s ones, you know, Pac-Man, things like that.
Did you see the short it's based on?
No, is it based on a short?
It's based on, yeah, a short. The short is like very straightforward, but it's like real world being turned into, you know,
like a video game,
right? Yeah, video game. But the short was really well made. of course, you know, when you see the short, it's like, I could see why someone would want to make this into a full blown movie. Mm-hmm. But watching that short, you don't think you're going to get Pixels.
No,
but that's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
But I just think it was enjoyable. Yeah, good references to 80s films. I think it deserves more than 10%. I think that's all it has on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think it deserves better. But no, like of all the movies based on video games, it is not a good one.
No.
One thing that I find is almost exactly like the one episode of Futurama.
Mm.
The one episode of Futurama where the aliens come and the aliens are, you know, like Donkey Kong, Pac-Man, and things like that. So it's
right.
That's the plot of Pixel. So I don't know if Chris Columbus stole from that, but it is a lot like that. But like I said, I think kids are, they'd enjoy Pixels.
Yeah, and I think you and I both have an unusual appreciation for Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You are a bit more into it than I am.
Yeah.
But
do you want to do a Sandler podcast?
It might happen. sounds like a stay tuned. But I think there's a lot of blowback for his – I think the negative reaction it has kind of like, you know how things have a half-life?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Adam Sandler blowback has a twice life, where every year, every movie, it kind of like adds to the to the vitriol by a factor of 100. But I have not seen Pixels, but it's always kind of in the back of my mind to watch.
You don't need to see Pixels.
Well, I'm interested in seeing it,
yeah,
checking it out. It's probably the only movie I will ever see Kevin James as the president of the United States.
Although I think his Netflix one, he's like a really rich assassin too. They pick him for very strange roles, especially the president in Pixels. That was peculiar.
It pays to be Adam Sandler's friend. My fourth is Wreck-It Ralph, which is also kind of heavily inspired by video games and has a lot of really great cameos. It's just sort of it's another one of these that sort of gets games, even though it's not telling the story of a particular video game. But you know, it's kind of a Donkey Kong game where Ralph is, you know, the Donkey Kong figure trying to kill a plumber. I don't think he's a plumber. I think he's a fix-it man.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of it's based on
Fix-It Felix
arcade games and things.
Right, and then it goes through like this the various games and in the arcade. It was actually directed by Rich Moore, who did Futurama and The Simpsons. He did episodes of those shows, so you know that aesthetic kind of follows. It's a nice balance between that and, of course, the Disney vibe, because the screenwriter is Jennifer Lee, who did Frozen and Zootopia. Zootopia, which I just recently watched, and
I had me
enjoyed.
Too.
Yeah,
it was very good, very well done.
I liked it a lot, and so it manages to ride that sweet spot where it's a Disney movie, but it doesn't necessarily feel like every other Disney movie. And the great voices,
special,
too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like John C. Reilly is the main one. Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think 2018 is the sequel, isn't it?
This
year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ralph Breaks the Internet is what it's called.
Oh, that's a great name for it.
So, yeah, I don't think... I think they've done some...
I think there's been a teaser.
I think there's been a teaser, but I know they showed like full-blown footage at the Disney convention last summer, but I don't think anything really has been released for it yet. But, I mean, there's a lot of time, but I will be eagerly looking forward to Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Mm.
That brings us to number five.
My fifth one is Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, directed by Mike Newell and starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal,
yeah,
as the Prince of Persia.
Yeah, which I'm not going to lie. See, you're making a joke about it. I'm not going to lie. He kind of worked as it, or at least...
he was believably Persian.
He didn't... Oh, that part of it, yeah. He looks similar to what he looks like in the video games, though.
Well, credit where credit's due.
I only played the... on Game Boy, I played the original Prince of Persia, but I played the one PS2 one, and he looked like Jake Gyllenhaal. But yeah, I never thought that maybe he should have been Persian, yes.
It is what it is.
But no, this is one that you do not need to see.
And it was from the days when they're like trying to make Jake Gyllenhaal an action star, which he's not built for, I don't think.
No, it's, not at all.
He's built for like the Nightcrawler roles, I think,
or Donnie Darko,
or Donnie. Well, that's kind of in the same mold, or
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
creepy.
So, yeah, creepy kid.
Creepy and quiet.
I have not seen Prince of Persia.
I saw it in theaters, big screen, and it's not worth the $13.
Yeah, well, I don't think
not even worth a torrent.
So I don't think anyone's re-releasing it, but
good.
I do think it's on Netflix though, but it looked like every other sort of like desert adventure movie. I guess it was like, because it was like 2003, 2004 when that came out. So it was kind of coming off The Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, if we have enough CGI and it's in a desert and people are being quippy with each other, then we'll make $1 billion.
Of Mummy. They should have had Brendan Fraser play Prince of Persia. And like The Mummy, it might have done a lot better.
Yeah, maybe. I think you might have been a bit too old for being a prince at that point, but
oh, King of Persia.
But I mean, yeah, King of Persia. Or I've done like something weird where it's like the Prince of Persia in the far future.
That would be cool.
Yeah, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but no, of the five I've mentioned, don't see this one.
Okay, fair enough. My number five is Mortal Kombat, which was based on the video game Mortal Kombat, and probably, I think, the best video game movie. I think it also Paul W.S. Anderson's best movie.
The second most famous Paul Anderson.
The second famous Paul, that's right. Not Phantom Thread director Paul Thomas Anderson. We're talking about Alien versus Predator director Paul W.S. Anderson. But yeah, like this is part of like his like 90s trilogy. Like he did Mortal Kombat, he did Event Horizon, and he did Soldier. And those last two were kind of like undermined by the studio, who didn't have confidence in, you know, space hell and in the case of Event Horizon. And so, you know, after that, he goes right into doing like AVP and the Resident Evil movies. And it's, you know, the nonstop. Anyway, Mortal Kombat, though, it doesn't overthink it, which is very good in a game that's just about two people fighting.
And that's what the film is.
And that's what the film is. It's a tournament and everyone goes there to fight and the fate of Earth hangs in the balance. And you have Christopher Lambert as Raiden, which is just cheesy enough to work. I was reading today, Cameron Diaz was supposed to play Sonya Blade, but she broke her wrist while training.
Oh, okay.
So that's why Bridget Wilson Sampras played Sonya Blade, but Cameron Diaz was supposed to play Sonya
Blade.
That
would have been very interesting.
But, you know, she... Cameron Diaz was in the Charlie's Angels movie. She was doing a lot of martial arts.
She was used to, you know,
so
action.
So I don't think it would have been that weird. What is kind of weird is that they kind of like cranked out a sequel to this. Like almost
it wasn't directed by the same guy, though.
No, it wasn't Paul W.S. Anderson. And you can tell the budget was like at least 75% cut from what they did. But because it opens and it just looks horrible. And the only two people that returned were Talisa Soto and Robin Shu, who played Liu Kang. And like everyone, like nobody else returned. Christopher Lambert didn't return. They got James Remar as Raiden in Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yeah, they should have just stuck with the first one.
Yeah. And then they, like Lyndon Ashby played Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat. And if you don't know Lyndon Ashby, kids, ask your parents about Lyndon Ashby. Or maybe not. Maybe ask your grandparents about Lyndon Ashby. But he Lyndon Ashby couldn't come back for Mortal Kombat Annihilation. He wanted too much money. Bridget Wilson wanted too much money. I don't know if that's true, but why would they be recast? It's crazy. Robin Shu was like the only one who had nothing else to do. It's like, we blew all our money on Robin Shu. We can't get Lambert. It's great. But the original Mortal Kombat, I think it still works. I think the score works. It doesn't try to think the plot. It's just about people fighting. And the only thing I still have a problem with is like Sonya Blade gets captured and they all have to go to the outer world to rescue her, which is stupid. But
Well, he's a smart director.
He was a smart director.
He knew what video game movie needed. Just some action and some fun.
I mean, he didn't, to his credit, he did not try to have like, what is Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
You know, what's the motivation? And it's just like, get everybody to the island, get them fighting. You do all the big guys. You get, you know, Raiden and Scorpio and Sub-Zero. And they do their thing. And it looks just good enough. Because this was like early CGI, and it's fine, it's fun, and you know, call it a day.
Yeah.
We're not calling it a day yet because we still have the new video game movie to review, and that is Tomb Raider. And before that, we're gonna take a little musical break. These are the folks who are currently on the CFRU Top 10. They are Nap Eyes, and this is from their new album, I'm Bad Now, and this is, I can't say it's the title song because it's just I'm Bad instead of I'm Bad Now, and the name of the album is I'm Bad Now. It's really making us think here. But it is I'm Bad. This is the Nap Eyes. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. Nothing gets past you now.
cause you always see it come. Said it moves even slower than you, which is amazing because you're so dumb. I tried to talk to you and call you wrong, but you'd get angry and you would suck your teeth at me. Don't want no answers when you got.
I think I know where they went. Our dads.
To the bottom of the sea?
They were headed to an uninhabited island. Somewhere off the coast of Japan. It used to be called Yamatai.
There's at least 6,000 islands off the coast of Japan. Hardly any of them are populated.
Well, I have a map. Now all I need to do is to figure out what these are. I think these are coordinates. The location.
They're clock hands.
They're not clock hands. They're not clock hands. They are clock hands. That's the one.
That's right in the middle of the Devil's Sea. You might as well tie a stone to your foot and jump off the boat now.
It'll be an adventure.
Death is not an adventure.
You can imagine what happens next. Mm-hmm. That was a clip from Tomb Raider. It is the new film from, I hope I say this gentleman's name right, Roar Uhung. And it stars Alicia Vikander, Dominic West, Walton Goggins, Daniel Wu, and Kristen Scott Thomas. Now, Peter, you're...
And Nick Frost.
Well, yeah, Nick Frost was on it. Yeah. He had a cameo. But Peter, you're a young. So, what is? Do you remember seeing the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider?
I remember it coming out, but no, I didn't go see it.
Hmm.
And there was a sequel too, though.
There was.
Yeah, and they were quite popular. But no, I did not go in and see the Lara Croft films.
You are right that I think the Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the original 2001, is still the highest grossing video game movie ever.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, if it made enough money for a reboot, like what's going on right now, that makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I saw the first one in theaters. I didn't see the second one. Mm-hmm. Once was enough. And so I was intrigued, to see this, because I like the idea of, I've never really played the Tomb Raider games, but I like the idea of mm-hmm. Tomb Raider. I like the idea of, the character of Lara Croft and going around and having adventures and solving tomb puzzles and discovering things and fighting the supernatural and fighting bad guys. It's
a really fun adventure game.
Yeah, it's a good basis for a movie. And I was really excited that they cast Alicia Vikander, mm-hmm. who's a great actress. Mm-hmm. Although
the Danish girl?
Danish girl, mm-hmm. Ex Machina. She was also in Man from U.N.C.L.E., and she was really good in Man from U.N.C.L.E. The kind of the biggest Hollywood movie she's been in before this is the Jason Bourne sequel, which she was not good in, but I don't think anyone is really good in that, so we can't really blame her for that. But I was very interested to see what she would do, and I was pleasantly surprised by this. I was entertained.
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
I was also very curious about it because I've never played it, but I used to hang out at friends' houses, and their older brothers, usually or sisters, would be playing a lot of Tomb Raider. It's quite popular to them. And I love Indiana Jones. I love adventure films. I love films that revolve around archaeology. And no, I was quite disappointed with this one. I thought all the actors did a remarkable job, but like as remarkable of a job as they could do with this script.
Yes.
But I thought the plot was too loose.
It was.
And I thought it was maybe like 20 minutes too long, even though it wasn't, I don't even think, fully 2 hours.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I think they did what they do with a lot of these reboots, which is they spent like an hour or a little bit more than an hour like really developing the main character.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets to the point where like, oh crap, there's a plot we have to resolve.
Yep.
And yeah, that's definitely where this comes from, where she kind of, where you see her in the beginning and she doesn't, I mean, she's an heiress, but she's not like accepting her
she's
title
a rebel.
And her status. Yeah, she's kind of rebelling. So you see her like doing mixed martial arts and getting her butt kicked there.
And biking.
And yeah, being a bike courier. And mm-hmm. she likes doing stuff for money. And they do this little fox chase, which I thought was an interesting sequence. And it didn't do anything new with the action, but you know, I thought it was engaging enough. And
yeah, it made you relate to the character.
Yeah, and then
that's the one thing about this film. I think she portrayed Laura Croft very well, and I did relate to her, and I was able to, you know, pay attention and follow along with her because I did care about her character.
Yes, Alicia Vikander is the all-star in this.
Yeah,
she's you know, the thing about when you go back and look at the Angelina Jolie ones. Angelina Jolie was hired because she's the closest a real-world woman can get to looking like how Laura Croft looked in those original games.
Oh, 100%.
So she's, like, it's almost like she's, you know, a character from Toontown in that regard. Mm-hmm. And but her Laura Croft, is obviously more seasoned.
Mm-hmm.
She's been Tomb Raiding for a while. So I found that character kind of very cold and very mechanical. And I'm not sure if that's like a function of how Angelina Jolie played her or what the movie asked her to do with the character. But this Laura Croft is very warm and
yes.
very open with her faults and very, you know, she's still learning to raid tombs and just learning to raid tombs. But the thing is she gets to the island trying to find like her father's last adventure where he kind of disappeared. But and then the kind of the moment she gets to the island, she's like in full Laura Croft mode.
Yeah.
And there's kind of no sign that of the character who was kind of in development in the first hour. She's now like on this, you know, supposedly uninhabited island in the middle of jungle. And
yeah, her character changes a bit too quickly.
Yeah.
I found.
Yeah.
A bit too quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I think that's the biggest fault with the film. And then people start doing things because the plot demands it. She manages to escape this work camp run by Walton Goggins, and she kind of immediately goes back because she has to go back because they have to find out what's in this tomb that everyone wants.
And, yep.
That part of it's kind of disappointing. It would have been interesting if it had gone a different way. Like, even if it, like, they had never gone to the tomb at all, if the tomb was, like, inconsequential to the fact that, you know, what she had to do on the island. But you know, when it gets to that point, when they go into the tomb and to find the MacGuffin there, it becomes very paint by numbers. And
well, they don't get into the tomb until way far in, like 50 minutes in, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like even longer than that. Like it's probably like the last 20 minutes of the film. And you said Indiana Jones. And I was thinking very much about Last Crusade.
Okay.
Watching this because, There's father-child dynamics.
Yeah, yeah.
There's even...
I think that might have gone a bit too far.
Yeah.
It sometimes resembled the Oedipus sort of complex thing, you know, the females, daughter-father.
Yeah.
Or son-mother for this daughter-father. I don't know. It got a little weird.
It's a little weird because I don't... I'm not sure if Dominic West is old enough to be Laura Croft or Alicia Vikander's father.
I don't know how old she was supposed to be playing.
That's true, too.
Because she hadn't done university or anything like that.
Maybe.
And they said that the father had been gone for 7 years.
Yeah.
Right? Seven years.
You might be right.
And like we saw how young she looked when her father left.
Yeah.
So her character seemed to only be supposed to be 17 or something like that.
Maybe a couple years older than that.
Yeah, she looked a lot older than that.
But yeah, Alicia Vikander's like 29 or 30 mm-hmm. in real life.
Mm-hmm. Dominic West is not. He's probably only in, what, like late 40s?
Probably.
Yeah.
It still felt a bit odd. Mm-hmm. But then the traps inside the tomb.
I liked that. I thought that was okay.
No, it was fine, but there's literally a gag where the floor starts falling away, which, of course, is something...
It's the exact puzzles that you have in certain levels in the game, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also in Last Crusade with the with the floor that falls away. But.
So you keep saying the Last Crusade. When I watched it, all I was thinking about was the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
In the very first part.
Right.
Where they have to go in and they have to find a proper tomb and they have to go through the puzzles and things of that nature.
Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
I mean, but not that Spielberg and Lucas invented that either. But
No, of course not.
The way it's shot and I think some of the very specific puzzles are sort of evocative of that. I think there is stuff in this that works a lot. That, you know, I think when she first escapes from the camp and she's going down the river and then finds the plane and is able to get out of the water and get into I thought that sequence was very well done because it's like an escalating series of things she has to do in very quick succession.
Yeah, I really did like that part. And that reminds me, I just do want to say the visuals were totally fine in this film. And the acting,
they were all right.
Yeah, I thought there were some cool shots.
Yeah, the visuals were
It was a nice glimpse that I think she's from London. Some cool shots of her biking around London.
Yeah, those scenes were very down. I wish people would stop like shooting London in like this bluish gray hue. It feels like everybody does that. And it's
because they do that in Sherlock, and Sherlock is so popular.
I know, but
people like it. Broadchurch, it's like that too.
They
just love it there.
I understand. It's dank in Britain. I mean, can we like throw in a yellow, please?
Yeah.
It's the action is done. It's very. Very like mechanically wise, it manages to get the job done. But I think I will take it to the next level and say that there were parts of it that I was very much enjoying, even though I accept there are issues with the plot and in the story. And I had a good time. In other words, I did not walk out of this like going, I do not want to see another Tomb Raider. I would actually like to see it too, and maybe. Getting like all this establishment stuff out of the way, maybe we can go into a Tomb Raider 2 and see Lara Croft on a new adventure. I like the twist with the MacGuffin too. I thought that it turned out to be not like a supernatural force. It turned out to be something quite ordinary, and I like that twist.
Yeah, more scientific.
Yeah, and I like that a lot. And so there's enough here that would make me say I would like to see something more going forward. The action services the plot well. Alicia Vikander is super great. It just, you know, if we could focus more on the writing next time, I think we
more can. On the writing. And for me in particular, what I think it needs, if they do a sequel, more screen time for the co-stars.
Yeah.
It was very just Lara Croft, which is cool. She's a great actor. But, like, we didn't see Dominic West or Walton Goggins, like, that much at all.
Walton Goggins is so wasted.
He should have been. Does he have a problem with that, with drinking on set?
I have no idea what his problem is.
But, he did look a little.
Yeah, but this was not peak Walton Goggins.
No, that'd be vice principal.
Yeah.
HBO.
We need peak Walton Goggins. If you're going to have Walton Goggins do a role like this, it has to be peak Walton Goggins.
Yeah.
But for him to like be this like conflicted villain, like, if I find this tomb, then I can go home and see my family. I'm like, no, Walton Goggins doesn't.
It wasn't the proper character for him.
Yeah. Walton Goggins might have a family in real life, but no Walton Goggins on screen has a family waiting for him somewhere because he's a nut job.
Exactly.
It was completely unbelievable.
Daniel Wu should have been in it more too.
Daniel Wu, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic.
You cast Daniel Wu in this, and he doesn't kick anyone in the throat once.
No.
Why? Because people may not know him by name, but if you've seen AMC's Into the Badlands, where he plays the main character, he's a tremendous martial artist, really good. And the thing that sells that show is the martial arts. Everyone's a great fighter on that show. So, to see him kind of side, first when he's introduced as kind of like the drunk sea captain.
Yeah.
And then to see him sidelined in the final sequence too, and in the climax where he's just kind of a guy standing there with a gun. It's like, no, like throw some fists.
He doesn't even go into the temple. He's not
a
part of, he's not in that part of the film.
Right. And it's not like Lara Croft doesn't have sidekicks either. Like in the games or in, you know, what I know from Lara Croft, the other movie, she has sidekicks. So I don't know if maybe that's something they could follow up on in a future movie.
I think they're expecting a sequel.
Yeah.
And they will build his character up to be more.
That would be cool, but I mean, it also sucks that they didn't, you know, make good use of him.
Yeah, in the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another one of my bugbears. And then, you know, like Kristen Scott Thomas in here too as Lara Croft's kind of guardian mother figure, and she's kind of like in the first, and I mean, we're inching close to spoiler territory, but you know, there's the big bad that I guess will be further developed in further sequels, the Trinity organization, and there's like a twist there, and it's like they say absolutely nothing about this group through the rest of the film. And then at the end, when you get this twist, you're supposed to go, oh, I can't believe it. And, you know, it's kind of like meaningless, at least to me. And maybe it does, you know, I don't know if this group is part of the Lara Croft mythology in the games.
I believe it is.
Yeah. But, you know, it's meaningless to me in the film because I don't know who these people are and what their goals are and who are they to Lara Croft or who are they to her father. It's it seems very well placed there to set up the future movies, but there's too much going on. Yeah. In other words, like
I could see why you did genuinely enjoy it though.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I just think I don't think it was bad, but I think it was disappointing because there's a lot of really nice elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when all put together, it just didn't work for me.
It may depend on what your point of view is and what you take into the movie. I think it's a thin line. You either kind of go with it or you don't. And I went with it by and large. And I think that was because of a couple of good action scenes and Alicia Vikander.
Well, yeah, she is great.
Yeah, she's really great. Maybe we could take a couple of minutes and talk about the future of video game movies because there's another one coming up in a couple of weeks, Rampage, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
And
he was in Jumanji, which isn't based on a video game.
But it's set up that way.
Yeah, it's set up that way.
Yeah, it's... I have not yet seen... You saw Jumanji, didn't you?
No, I didn't see Jumanji. No?
Oh, you're a big fan of the original, right?
Yeah.
I think it comes out on video this week, so it may be worth checking out.
More recently, there was the Battleship or Battlefront or Battleship. With Rihanna.
Well, that was based on a board game.
Well, board game, yeah, but there's computer versions of that board game, so it's a video game.
All right, that's really connecting the dots, but... I would admit, like, I like Rampage. I played the original Rampage when it was on one of the original gaming systems, NES or Super NES or Genesis or one of them. And it's fun, you know, being a monster and destroying cities, which is basically the point of the game. You rack up points by how much you destroy.
Yeah. Who's directing it?
I think it is the gentleman who directed San Andreas.
Okay.
I'm going to look that up super quick. Or as quick as his internet connection is. Yeah, Brad Peyton, who did San Andreas. So, I mean, it's an established team, him and Dwayne Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not been bowled over by the trailers. I've found the trailers kind of stupid.
In what way?
I don't know, like The Rock doing like gorilla sign language and
weird things like that.
And you know, the whole thing, it's like Jeffrey Dean Morgan turns up as like a man in black and like Joe Manganiello is briefly in the I mentioned this to you because they showed the trailer again before Tomb Raider. And who else is in it? Malin Ackerman, I think, is the bad guy. I like Malin Ackerman, but it just seems like they're treating it like a disaster movie with comedy instead of like a video game, which I think the video game would not be focused on the humans so much because it's about monsters destroying cities.
Yeah, and it should just focus on that.
Like it could be a black comedy. I mean,
like Mortal Kombat, like we were talking about.
Yeah.
It knew that. It knew it should just focus on the fighting and the enjoying parts of the video game.
Yeah.
So that's what I hope Rampage does.
Well, yeah.
But like you said, based on the trailer,
but I mean, it's got The Rock in it. You don't hire The Rock to play second fiddle to giant CGI monsters.
Yeah, no.
I wouldn't think so. And it's just so weird that it's 25 years later. We still can't get a decent... I mean, we've got... I mean, you know, I guess maybe considering... Well, that's not even true either. I was going to say, you know, it took a while to get a decent comic book movie, but, you know, there have been lots of decent comic book movies over the years. But, you know, for 25 years to still struggle with this, I feel it's... I don't know. It's bizarre that you can't take all this, like, wealth of material and take it and turn it into something that... Not that it has to be exactly like a video game, because you can't really translate things from one media to medium to another like that. But, like, if you look at something like Harry Potter, which is has so much more detail to the world that you can't transfer all that to the movies at once. It just has a wealth of mythology. And I think video games sort of have that same thing. Can't we transfer the spirit more of the thing?
I also think one of the main issues would be, say it's based on a movie based on a TV show, based on a book, based on a graphic novel. What they have to do and what their issue is picking what to not put in it, right? Because they have so much information and so much that they want to put into their film.
Right.
Whereas if it's based on a video game, it's so loose. Like, they don't have much. So it's more based around the director. And it's more based around, like, their independent writing of it. So it is a lot harder, and that's why I don't think it's as easy, and we don't have enough good video game movies.
It could be, but you know, that's sort of where you get something like a Tomb Raider, which you could take the video game stuff and graft it on to a typical adventure movie, like adventure movie plot A, literally plot A, and just say, okay, now it's a Tomb Raider movie, and perhaps that's why those movies succeed a bit better than your average, you know, video game movie, like something like Doom. Which has, you know, is a very specific, not just has a very specific vibe as a first-person shooter, but also has is a very specific sort of time and place as kind of one of the first first-person shooters, which, you know, you can't replicate the experience of playing a first-person shooter for the first time.
No.
Which may be a factor. Interesting. This is an interesting sociological discussion, I must admit. But, yeah, final word on Tomb Raider. Would you say to people, go check it out? Or wait for Netflix? Or
I would say it's definitely wait for Netflix. Or even on demand if you want to pay $4 for it. But
how generous.
No, I personally don't think people need to bother going to see it in theaters. But you enjoyed it.
I might agree. I might agree with that. Like, I wouldn't say make an effort, go out and see it. But if you get to the movie theater, you don't know what to see. And Tomb Raider is playing. I'd say check it out. You know, yeah, it's a good time. I don't think you're going to walk it away like mad and furious and disappointed and blame me for wasting your money and your time. It's, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing some support for this, because I wouldn't mind seeing Alicia Vikander get another crack and doing another Tomb Raider movie. And we could always use more female heroines who are smart and strong. And
that's the thing. I do hope it has a sequel, because I think I would enjoy it a lot more if, like, we were talking about Daniel Wu and other characters were put in more.
It would be great if it came back and we had Daniel Wu as a sidekick and he got to do some fighting, and we had Nick Frost, more of Nick Frost as, like, her, like, supplier of like weapons and material, and him hanging out, and they're all hanging out at Croft Manor and going on adventures. And
see, I'd watch that. And I would suggest people should go into theaters to see that. But no, just wait for on demand or Netflix for Tomb Raider.
Yeah, or, you know, if you're, you know,
or if you go to the theater, like you said,
yeah.
If you've already seen Black Panther and Annihilation Black Panther and other films right now in theaters, then yeah, go see it.
Yeah. If you once you've run out of everything else at the movie theater to see, go see Tomb Raider. Good enough. That's it for this edition of End Credits. We hope you liked it. And if you did like it, you can listen to us again on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can also find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. Peter, where can people find you on the internets?
As per usual, Mr. Taurak on YouTube or Twitter.
And you can find me tomorrow at 5 p.m. on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca if you're feeling more political. And been a lot of interesting political stuff happening lately, so I'll plug that fairly heavily this week because I'm the host, so there you go. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will see you back here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits. See you then.